Look, I see the heavens opened, and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God. I think today, you know, as we maneuver through this really difficult space of worship, I think we need to hold that image, all of us, that Jesus stands with us right now, that Jesus is fully present with us. It might just be Bob and I sitting here in the sanctuary, but I can tell you all of us in spirit are here together as one in Christ. And I am grateful and filled with the Spirit to know that that we have gathered despite all that's going on. So let us just open our hearts today. Let us open our ears. It seems to be all that we have today, right, is our ears. And we hear in this story that the crowd covered their ears. Let us not cover our ears today, because it is the one gift that we have as we listen to the message. And hopefully we are transformed and walk away differently today because of the word that we hear and the message that we hear today in our service. So in our reading this morning, we relive the Good Friday story of Jesus. This time, the Apostle Stephen is testifying before the Sanhedrin and the chief priest. Essentially, Stephen is asked to clarify who he is. Is he a faithful Jew or is he a false teacher? Remember, the early followers of Jesus are Jewish, attending synagogue and trying to integrate the message and way of Jesus into their current traditions. And this causes tremendous tension and fear in a community of people who completely shape their identity around laws and traditions rooted from commandments given by God. The context of Stephen's death illustrates for us what happens when a minority position threatens those in power or values and beliefs upheld by a majority. Jesus had forewarned the disciples that living the way of Jesus will evoke resistance and controversy, leading to risk and potentially the loss of their own lives. So here stands Stephen before the religious authorities. And Stephen responds to their question by retelling Israel's story. He asserts that he is with them. He follows, though, with insults and rebukes and essentially accuses them of murdering Jesus. So instead of converting the crowd, he infuriates them. Stephen's in the midst of talking to the Sanhedrin, and he's essentially accused them of murdering Jesus. And instead of converting the crowd, he actually infuriates them. As the mob surrounds Stephen, he suddenly witnesses to what he sees. He says Jesus is standing with God. And when he sees this, it's essentially saying Jesus is standing with him too. As he calls out what he sees, the crowd covers their ears. They refuse to listen to the testimony and thus pursue stoning Stephen. See, for somebody to engage in such an inhumane act, such as stoning, the humanity of the person who is being victimized has to be denied. Acts of prejudice and hate begin when we fail to recognize our common humanity, when we fail to value life before all things, even beliefs. So with this vision, Stephen remains confident in his message, undeterred as witness to Jesus. And he dies in a similar manner of Jesus. Stephen chooses nonviolence. He chooses life. And he kneels down and prays. Stephen prays forgiveness for his beloved family that has now turned its fears and anguish upon him. He prays for his perpetrators. The Apostle Stephen is considered the first Christian martyr. The word martyr literally means to bear witness. What we discover in this text is much deeper than a message of martyrdom, though martyrdom may be illustrated as like the ultimate expression of sacrificial love. But Stephen lives out what Jesus asks of his disciples, to be his witness to those nearby and far away. So the question we face today is, what does it mean to bear witness to Christ? And if we look at the effective means by which Stephen witnesses, we discover two things. First, bearing witness means to testify to what you see and experience. And it includes acts of justice, mercy, and peace. This is a blend of word and action. It is rooted in what we see and experience so that we proclaim God's steadfast love and mercy in our lives. Jesus asks that if we believe in him, that we too will do works like his and more. So what does it look like to bear witness? Let me share with you a story about just an everyday person doing works like Jesus to set the oppressed free. Viola Luizzo, a wife and mother of five children, lived in Detroit during the Civil Rights Movement. Viola was one of the millions of Americans who watched the televised footage of Bloody Sunday on March 7th in 1965. During a peaceful march from Selma to Montgomery, 600 marchers were halted at the Edmund Pettus Bridge and violently attacked by Alabama state troopers and local police. Using tear gas and billy clubs, the police brutally beat the protesters, hospitalizing 50 people. Viola was also one of the millions of Americans who heard Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. call all civil rights supporters to come to Selma for a second march. Viola knew about the fire hoses, the German shepherds, and billy clubs. Viola understood the stigma and danger that came with supporting and loving people of color. Despite all of it, Viola was so compelled by the call that she left her family in Detroit to join the community in Alabama. On March 26, 1965, Viola was transporting volunteer Leroy Moten, age 19, in her Oldsmobile from Montgomery to Selma on Highway 80. A car full of Klansmen spied Viola and her black male passenger. Pulling alongside Viola's car, they fired shots into the car and struck Viola two times in the head. Within a week, think about this, in a week of her response to King's call, Viola was dead, murdered on a road that was a battleground for justice, for the right of all people to vote. There are people that raged over the fact that a mother would abandon her children to risk her life for another people. Her daughter, Lilibeau, was not surprised by her instantaneous reaction to King's call, explaining that Viola always took action when she saw wrong. Viola had said, "I can't sit back and watch my people suffer." She called folks who looked nothing like her, my people, when her friends, family, and nation violently rejected a people based on color. Viola was the only white woman to die in the civil rights movement. Some people argue that the national outrage over the slaying of a white woman actually sped up the process of approving the Voting Rights Act on August 6, 1965. Just 5 months later, that act was passed. The interesting thing is, today, very few people even know her story. Both Stephen and Viola were willing to testify to what they were seeing and experiencing, even though they spoke differently than the majority in their community. Both Stephen and Viola acted in a way of compassion and mercy and nonviolence. Their message was for justice and peace, even though it stood against normalized culture. In choosing love and committing to life, they both lost their lives. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 13 to 17 teaches us this. Who will harm you if you are zealous for good? But happy are you, even if you suffer because of righteousness. Don't be terrified or upset by them. Instead, regard Christ the Lord as holy in your hearts. Whenever anyone asks you to speak of your hope, be ready to defend it. Yet do this with respectful humility, maintaining a good conscience. Act in this way so that those who malign your good lifestyle in Christ may be ashamed when they slander you. It is better to suffer for doing good, if this could possibly be good, God's will, than for doing evil. See, the presence of someone standing with you in solidarity is a powerful source of hope. It's what Jesus offers Stephen at his time of death. The presence of steadfast love and peace is a powerful message in the face of suffering and despair. Stephen offered his mercy and peace to his persecutors, even in his murder. In both stories, the loss of their lives also perpetuated goodness. In less than 5 months following Viola's murder, the Voting Rights Act was passed. The persecution in Jerusalem actually causes the early Jesus followers to scatter from the city. And at first, this might seem like a bad thing, right? But it wasn't. Because what happened is all these people fled. And guess what they did? They shared the message. The movement, the Christian movement, was perpetuated by the persecution. Sometimes our greatest growth occurs in the response to the hardest struggles in our life. These stories of Stephen and Viola challenge us to consider how our faithfulness as people of the way clash with the normalized assumptions and practices of modern culture. As people of the way, how does that influence the way we witness to our family, friends, and community? How do we reconcile these differences and remain faithful followers? This week, the effects of the pandemic continually heighten, especially as our local, state, and national leaders navigate how to possibly reopen our country. This is a complex matter beyond any one person's capability. I can only fathom it slightly and trying to figure out what our microcosm of a church needs to do. But here are stories that I'm hearing. I'm hearing that more people of color are dying of COVID-19. Clergy friends shared the story of an African-American family in Detroit who contracted COVID-19. The family of three was denied access to health care. They couldn't access anything. They were told to return home and take Tylenol. All three of them died. The poverty, the lack of equal access to health care, education, and healthy living conditions is increasing the risk of death when a person of color contracts COVID-19. I'm seeing essential workers serving on the front lines without adequate personal protective equipment and access to testing. One of my fellow clergy talked about his son working in a hospital without protective gear. He actually had to go out and look for it and find access to the gear that they need to protect themselves. Many of these essential workers, because of their job, also don't have access to health care and yet are out there on the front lines doing what they need to do. On the Native American reservations, people are dying at extremely high rates because of their living conditions. They have limited access to electricity and they're unable to communicate the needs out into their larger community. They have inadequate or no health care facilities, and oftentimes increased health issues just because of the environmental injustices that have been happening on the reservations over time. This is a snapshot of what I witnessed today. And this is what Jesus calls us to do as disciples, to bear witness to what we are seeing and experiencing. It is our work to recognize the patterns in our culture that result in injustice and violence. In the parable of the lost sheep, Jesus explains that a shepherd who has one lost sheep would leave the other 99 to go find that one sheep. We can bear witness by being a voice and support of the vulnerable, the poor, the sick, and the imprisoned. We can bear witness through our actions by standing in solidarity with the vulnerable, poor, sick, and imprisoned. As Christians, like Stephen, we can embrace the vision of Jesus standing by the right hand of God, standing with us. When we choose to value the life of the one, despite standing alone, Jesus is with us. Friends, my heart has a passion for racial injustice, but we all have different passions. Some of us are passionate about poverty. I know we have the India mission as a result of the passion of one person who's adamant about building a hospital in India. We had a person here who set up a whole movement to raise money and feed the poor, right? We have people that are passionate about environmental injustice. There's all different ways that we can be witnesses to what we're seeing and take action to work towards that moment of justice. There is nothing that can defeat the love of Christ. Let us bear witness through our gentle and authentic words that express what we see and experience. Let us bear witness through our loving and just actions that affirm the value of all human life, especially the one that is lost. Praise be to God.